Accession number 26864, Reel 4.
Arthur Caney, Reel 4. So you'd arranged an assembly point?
Yes, this at night. But during the day, we're told not to fire at any planes that came over, because not to give the position away. And one flew over so low, I could see him, it's too quick, really. As they so low down, came in too quick for us to do any. We were told not to fire in any case. But I could see that man looking. We were both looking at each other, so close together. I thought, well, this is strange. When really we felt we had to fire, but obviously not to give the position away.
So how long did this engagement at Escap Canal, how long did that take?
Well, it was a few days. The night before that, which I'm talking about, that battle, the particular one, we were short of food, a bit short, but the cook sergeant came up with stew. He got a chicken from somewhere, got stew, so we had our food. And we had a big wall along the front, which we had holes in. I mean, it's like the old-fashioned reading in cowboys and Indians. And this rifle we had, this anti-tank rifle, we hadn't been able to use it because we hadn't met any tanks on our forward area. Anyway, they were shooting at this place, so at night it was easy to see where they were shooting from. They had ammunition which you could see where it was coming from. So I used this anti-tank. I stopped it. Whether they stopped because it got close to them or not, or whether it hit him, I don't know. It's only time to use the anti-tank rifle.
Really?
Well, we had no anti-tanks to shoot, no tanks to shoot at. It was rather unfortunate that they didn't come up, let us use our ammunition. But we had to carry that around. It was so heavy. It was a weapon it was useless. It was never used afterwards, I don't think.
Were you against German infantry then?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, funny you should say that. It was on a forward slope, and they were in what we now recognise as tank suits. They could have been out of tanks. I think they could have been tank people.
Right. Yeah. And you were taking casualties. Were you dug in trenches or
well, you see, I'm now with a mortar platoon.
Yeah.
Which is part of the support company, in those days attached to a headquarter company,
right.
Which is not far as forward as the forward company troops, who would have been digging in.
Right. Yeah.
But it was so mobile then that I doubt they had the chance. And we didn't dig in because at that stage it wasn't necessary where we were.
How chaotic was it? Were you getting sort of clear orders?
Yes. No, everything was well organised. We're coming, this is early on. We were well organised right through until the 31st of May. And the 31st of, well, we lost a lot of men coming back through. The companies lost them. I didn't lose many.
So can you tell me about any of the other engagements between the 10th and the 31st of May?
Yes. Oh, yes. We were on another canal, exactly where I'm not sure. We were on the right flank of the British Army. My little group, my section, which we only had a few emblems left, about 15, we were on the right, on the extreme right. Next to there were supposed to be the Belgians. Now, the date, I'm not sure, about 27, 28, when Belgium capitulated, we were spread out so wide, one man to the other, that it was at least 10, 15, 20 yards apart. So you could imagine the area the battalion was holding and how lightly it was held because of circumstances. That's that date I told you. So we were then told, the guards were pretty close to us, they had to go back to England, this battalion, because to protect the Queen, I suppose. I found later they were, must have been the 27th, when they were parading through England. The Belgians were then in their place on the right. Then the Belgians capitulated. I looked back and there were the white flags behind us. So when they capitulated, there was no one on our flank. And it was fortunate the Germans didn't know. Otherwise, they could have come through the whole lot. I mean, we couldn't have held them up.
How intense was the fighting? I mean, your mortar platoon was...
Well, we lost our... at the escarpment, we lost our... Had to, because we had to get out quickly, we were told to scuttle it all. So we had smashed it up and threw away the... Smashed the sights and threw the fire bins away and carried our bits away and dumped it anywhere.
Right.
That was the time when they said, every man for himself. Mm. So we couldn't take the heavy stuff. But it didn't take long before we assembled again, another couple of hours. We'd arranged what to do.
So you had an assembly point?
Well, yes, you see, George Warnall's adjutant, he gave the orders, he had it organized, he was waiting for us at that assembly, was exactly where the artillery was still firing, and the machine gunners were firing over our head, giving us cover fire. It was all so well organized. Just imagine, the machine gunners were giving us cover and fire, and we were coming back anyway, surrounded somewhere. We didn't know we were surrounded. So we come back to this assembly point, got together again, and carried on as normal.
Yeah.
No, looking back, that was well organised.
Mm. So how well did your men perform in battle? Because you'd done years of training with them, and you were used to commanding them in training situations. How different was it when you were...
Well...
It was real.
Well, you see... At that stage, I had in my platoon some from Southern Ireland, some from two, well, say one or two, I don't know how many of each, but say two of one, two of Southern Ireland, two of Northern Ireland, and we had them all parts of England. And when we were marching, which we did a lot of then, we'd be singing songs. They would be singing the rebel songs, and the other ones would be singing the green ones in. The wearing of the green.
Oh, yes.
Wearing of the green, and then the orange. One the wearing of the green, one the orange, in the same platoon,
yeah.
Taking it in turns. Just imagine the spirit, can't you? North and south, eh? Mm. And us singing our Fly Beyond the Tournament, and things like that. Mm. It was a good feeling. We were pretty close.
And when they were under fire, how different was it?
They were there. Well, just imagine if you can visualise. I've just said to the others and my platoon, last man, last round, three times, so you can imagine how at different stages. Mm. I mean, you can see.
Because some of them must have been very scared.
Well, of course. Oh, no. I had attached to me a platoon, attached the pioneer platoon. One chap, unfortunately, shot his finger off, and that was the end. He had to go back, but. That's the only time I know anyone did anything.
Yeah.
No, they were all there. Mm. Now, I'm so proud of our Reds. Well, all of them. But what's so nice when I'm saying all this, we had the Scottish, the Irish, and the Wiltshires fighting. And the last day, we assembled in a wood the remnants of each of those battalions. Although they were not close enough to see each other, at 4 o'clock we were told we would just go into battle again as one regiment because we lost so many. If we didn't get the order to move by 6 o'clock, we would then move to the coast. So we were all ready to go back as a combined, as one unit. Fortunately, we were told to make for the coast.
And that was the 31st, was it?
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, we'll stop just there. So whereabouts were you at this time then?
What date are we talking about?
We were talking about the 31st, and you were waiting for an order to...
Oh, yes, that was on the border between the Belgian and French border.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which we know now. I didn't know then.
Yeah.
I know since where it was.
Yeah. Well, how did you feel about the way things were going? I mean, were you,
Well, we were very weary. And we had, we had an order of the day issued by our divisional commander, was the 5th Division, and he was talking about the way in which the 5th Division had enabled the evacuation to take place. evacuation took place, I think, from the 26th, a few days before. So all that was left when we were in the wood, really, were the fighting troops, of which our brigade was the Wiltshire Regiment, Inskin and Fusiliers, and the Cameronians. So we'd been training together for a long time, and at that stage, we knew whatever, if we either went forward or back, we knew that we had enough training to do it.
So describe the terrain. You'd call it a wood. I mean, what was the terrain like,
you know? Well, at this particular time, when we were waiting for this order, it was not a very thick wood, but enough for cover. And
was this amidst farmland, or...?
No, it seemed to be on its own one big wood, which we'd marched a long time to get there, from other areas, because we were closing the gap. We were towed. But when we assembled there, we were waiting for orders to move at 6 o'clock. And the cook, sergeant, had produced something, hot water, which was tea officially, but it was the worst tea we've ever had. And we had a biscuit each and some treacle. I think it was good because it was energy giving, but I've never been able to eat treacle since.
You associate it with those feelings, do you?
Oh, yes. Not only the feelings of the... We were feeling quite... Except being tired, we were... It was normal. We'd been fighting for a long time, since the 10th of May.
So... Do you think some of the troops were quite frightened?
No, I've never thought of that. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that, because one man did. One man from the Pioneer Platoon shot his finger, so he must have been. But if any person was frightened, it was never shown. I'm in the most funny place where we've been blown up by shells, big shells, which blew us off the ground in some cases. But whatever feeling, it was controlled.
Is that because you're in a group and you don't want to let the rest of the group down? Is that
there? Well, from my point of view, as a sergeant in those days, it was definitely the fact that you couldn't show because you had to look after your own people. And it, likewise, it went right down. The Lance Corp was looking after the private soldier. And the private soldier was seen as looking after a young lad. So, all in all, nobody could show, would ever dream of, in front of them. But maybe out of sight you feel a bit. But at that stage, I can't think anybody in that unit, except this one, had shown anything.
Would they have known that you were waiting for an order, and if you didn't get it, you'd have to move to the coast?
My group was then a platoon of mortar, two sections of mortar platoon. That's the ones I was responsible for. And we kept together, so we didn't know a lot which was going on. We were just waiting then. We would have gone into battle. The Inskillin Fusiliers, Cameronians, had about 250 left each, roughly the same. So there were 600 men going to form one battalion, which would have done just the same as they did before.
So did you stick to sort of being in charge of your own men, or did the men combine and you had...
No, we were still in our own groups, in our regiment, though we were thinned down to about a very small number. We were all in our company area and section area. At least we didn't see the companies. I mean, they were maybe 200, 300 yards away in the wood. So my two groups, the mortar platoon, two sections, were part of headquarter company, and we didn't see the forward hand-to-hand fighting as much as the forward companies, where the shelling and the machine guns and everything. So we were rather fortunate in looking back that we didn't lose so many men.
So you were waiting for this order by 6 o'clock?
Yes.
You didn't get it?
Well, we were resting, waiting for this order, and I think the order came about 5 o'clock to make our way to the beaches. Now, that meant we made our way in our own groups. There was nobody saying, all we knew was in that direction. So we made our way, marching properly as a section or platoon. It was all We hadn't quite split up then, but marching back to the... We were towed to the coast. Didn't know anything about Dunkirk. Nobody mentioned that name.
Did you know how far it was to the coast?
No. No, but as we were marching, a truck came back, one truck of our regiment, which was surprising, and we realised now he'd been carrying the drums or something and had come back empty to pick us up. So I loaded this vehicle up. I told them to get anywhere, on the top, everywhere. It was obvious the vehicle was going to be dumped later, so it didn't matter. And then there's a few of us left, and thinking back, he said he would come back for us, and I cannot remember to this day whether he did come back for us. I know we marched on, and I know when we got to the dunes. We got to a place called Le Pan, which is on the border, French and German and Belgian border. But the dunes, Bray Dunes, which it was called, I know later the name. In those days, we only knew Le Pan. But I've been back there since.
What did you see when you got there, when you got to, you saw the dunes?
That's all we saw, troops waiting to... Altogether different to what I've been told about Dunkirk, because this was not Dunkirk. This was Le Pan, which is about 12, 14 miles north of Dunkirk.
And how many troops were there on the dunes?
Well, there weren't so many as all that. There was one narrow fisherman's jetty, a long, long jetty. You could get about 4 men. When we got there on the 31st, must have been the late, still light, on the 31st, they were lined up on the jetty, and there were a few more waiting to get on. So I met, there was a sergeant friend of mine from the Kaya platoon. So we both wandered round to find out where water was or anything else. And then we could see that there was all this waiting, and we didn't want to queue up. I was a bit senseless to queue up with no boat in front. So we then went a few yards to the rear, and we slept until the next morning. And I had a few men with me because we seemed to be all... They seemed to graduate. We didn't have to give any orders then because it was... We'd lost connection with the first group in the vehicle. They'd gone ahead, so we'd lost contact. We didn't know what's going to happen, whether we'd meet again then. So,
how many in your group then?
Well, I don't know. About 6 or 7. That's all I think.
It's you and
well, only because we left those people queuing up and went back to have a rest. But where we went, our men followed. Those six followed along. Because there's nothing else to do. And we slept until the next morning, 1st of June. Mm-hmm. Now, the 1st of June, I don't know what time we woke up or what time things happened, but we were all ready in case of aircraft coming over. We were ready with our... We would be able to fire at them as a group. So all disciplined and all ready to do that until we got on the boat. Anyway, you joined the queue in the end as it thinned down. And as we made it, there was not a rush. It was all an orderly queue, just going the ordinary training, you would think. We got to the front, and I got to the front then, after some time, and there was a big gap between us and the boat. So there was the captain. He shouted out, "Hurry up." He must have been saying that to everybody to clear the... Hurry up, you know, to get them on. But everybody was so weary, really. We're not really worried about... rushing on.
Yeah. What sort of a boat was it?
Well, it was the Maid of Orleans. It was one of these pleasure boats. And when I think of it, we got on board, we made our way. Well, we were not controlled, we were really a bunch of all units. But everybody made space for someone else. We all got where we could. And then I thought later of the troops, the crew of the boat. Down below, the captain was only that one above with us. And I thought those people going backwards and forwards, I think that was afterwards, those chaps didn't even see the light of day. They were going backwards and forwards. Wonderful, really, when you think of it.
So was there any German aircraft?
Flying over occasionally, but not enough for us to get involved with shooting. They were all in a difference. We didn't know then... that our air force were miles away. We didn't see any in all those days. I can't remember seeing an aircraft for the last 4 or 5 days, British. And therefore we were rather disgusted with the Air Force. Later we learned a different story. What, you know, they were doing their job properly. But then we were very anti-Air Force.
How close were the Germans to you on your retreat to the beach?
We didn't see them.
Didn't see any signs.
No, not at that last few days. Mm. Not from the 31st.
Right. Okay.
But we realised we were there ready as a platoon. As a battalion, like the 3 battalions, formed into one, ready to go into action. But we realise now that we were then within the perimeter which had been closing up, and we held the perimeter so long, we'd reduced to so few troops. And I suppose they were saving them for later on.
What was the captain of the Maid of Orleans like?
Well, I only saw him on the bit as he shouted, you know, and we all shouted, come on, and I helped him a bit to get the troops quickly on, all my group on.
How crowded was the vessel?
Which, it was crowded, yes. You didn't have any space. You had to look around and find places. It was, but when we got on, we didn't know, nobody said anything about going back to the UK. We thought, at least my group thought, we were going round to another part of the coast. I mean, it seemed logical to us that we would go fight somewhere else.
So you weren't aware it was a retreat?
No. Well, we knew we were gone back
to
the coast and got on a boat. But that boat, we thought, was to go around to another place. So it was a surprise. We went to sleep. So by the time we woke up, found that we were in Dover, I think. Dover.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a shock.
Yeah. Yes. Well, when we got off the boat...
Was it very busy with lots of boats coming in? Or?
Can't remember other boats.
Okay.
All I could remember coming into this big shed, mm-hmm. what must be the docks, where they had various staff officers around under the police, CMPs. And we were instructed to hand our weapons in to a pile. And that was really against the grain, I thought. But there we are. There were so few of us to... We were in England, and we had a different approach.
Why did they want you to hand your weapons in?
Because they wanted them for other people. Because we were then... We gathered a few, and I looked around and saw a few of my... I put my hand up, and we all gathered together. So I got about 8, and we then went towards a train where the WVS were issuing tea. I can't remember any food, but that was enough. Somehow, thinking back, we didn't seem interested in food. We had other things on your mind. I think that's what happens. You've got things like that on your mind, you don't think of food, do you? Water? Yes.
And did you have any idea where you were going?
This is a funny thing about it. We got on this train, and we looked up through to see where a place we could space, and we found a few of our other... plenty of our regiment there, but we wanted to be together naturally. So we got in the cars as many as we could find of our own platoon. So we went to sleep, and the next thing I remember is some funny foreign language, and we thought it was Germans. But we were in Wales, and it was the Wales. Yes, they were shouting at the station. When I looked back, we were then looking round for a rifle, but didn't have one. But all it was in Wales, talking Welsh.
Yeah. And where did you end up?
We found it up at a place right at the far west of the country, right on the coast. The name I cannot remember. But we didn't... Somehow or other we assembled, I presume, what was left, assembled in one room there, sorted our kit out, had showered, had food, and went back to the... and rested. Had a good rest. I had to collect the pay books of all my platoon to hand them in. Afterwards, I thought that was a bit slow. I should have thrown them away because that showed the record of the pay which had been received, which wasn't very much.
And if you'd thrown them away, what would have happened then?
Well, I think we would have a lot more credit, money to our credit, Because they wouldn't have been able to check on what we'd received. Not that we'd received much the last... Well, it's only 10th of May onwards, 3 weeks. So it wasn't too long.
And so you stayed in Wales for a while, didn't you?
We stayed there for about 3 days. Cleaned up, tidied up, got new uniform. But then, of course, we had the flash, which was a divisional flash, which was a Y, which we wore on our shoulders, and our own cap badge. And that time we saw a newspaper, and we saw a newspaper showing troops, and I'm sure they were not fighting troops, wearing a Dunkirk badge in London. And we thought to ourselves, well, they couldn't have been fighting troops, because fighting troops were proud of their divisional flash and their cap badge. And no person who had been through any stuff at Dunkirk would have put a badge up. So I thought, the people who made them and sewed them, and the people who worn them, they were phonies. Must have been phonies. Nobody would. We were rather surprised about that.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the news about Dunkirk? Because you must have then caught up with the fact that, you know, so many people had been lost and...
Well, we knew how many had been lost from our own unit, so we knew it was pretty grim. But what I thought was so wonderful was the manner in which we knew. I mean, we only saw one boat, because this was towards the end. I mean, we were going away on the 1st of June, and although they say they got a few more away last up to the 4th of June, there must have been one or two only around the coast and some further down. But the Dunkirk business, we didn't... understand until later.
Because it was quite a depressing time, wasn't it, for a lot of people? You know, they felt it was a failure.
And oh, yes, without a doubt.
But that didn't affect you at the time?
No, because we were all lucky to be back, but once we had our clothes on, we got together, and we were sent on leave. We'd all been able to send a card from the beach, no, from the assembly area when we got off the boat, home, one of these printed cards, which crossed out wounded, left, you know. So at that least we knew the family. My wife at home knew we were there. So we went on leave then. Got on leave, and everybody had to wear gas mask, steel helmet you carried with you. Now, when I got home... Or it wasn't my home, really. It was my wife's home in Darlington. So naturally, I went for a walk. I went across the street to see some friends, just straight across the road, and the CMB walked by. And he had the audacity to take my name for not having a gas mask, wearing a gas mask. Now, I blew my top, really. In the end, who could just imagine? 50 yards or 20 yards across the road... So the time I saw it, but it was a bit of a... We didn't like anything like that in the unit, but I thought we couldn't quite settle down to that sort of thing.
I'll stop you there. Arthur Caney, end of reel 4.